Get to 9,000 tonight, no problem.
Don't strain yourself.
You know, we're going to get some questions tonight around methylene blue, I'm sure. People are asking where to get it. I think we have it in the office. Is that something we have?
Yeah, we have it. I think we have it in all our offices. Plus, you can order it yourself off of Amazon. But yeah, we have it. I take it every day.
Do you really?
Makes me ride my bike better. I do 10 drops.
You do 10?
Yeah. It's a half milligram per drop. So, you know, it's not a high dose. It's not going to hurt anybody.
Well, man, you ready to get into some questions? Ready to do this?
Yeah.
All right, guys. We are going to answer questions that came in throughout the week here at the first part, as you guys know. If you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put those in the comments. We're going to get to every single question tonight on the Performance Medicine Show. I'm pumped, man. This is going to be a good one. And I'm going to start here. We've got a couple pain questions, which is really interesting because you talk a lot about, you know, the fact that people go to the doctor for two reasons. They're either in pain or they're tired. And these questions are around pain. I'm a 36-year-old with endometriosis. I was diagnosed via laparoscopic procedure 2 years ago. I have low-grade cramping, bloating, and very dull but manageable pain 24/7. However, the pain becomes unbearable the first few days of my cycle. The pain is so intense that NSAIDs will not alleviate it. The question is, do you have any recommendations for treatments that could help ease the pain on the worst days? And just for some context, Pop, they've tried heat in a TENS unit with a small amount of success, but wondering if they should incorporate any additional supplements or remedies to make these difficult days easier.
Yeah. Well, you know, endometriosis is a situation where you have part of your uterus, your endometrial lining, that is in places other than your uterus. Like it can be on your intestines, your bladder, your ovaries. And that's the diagnosis, is doing a laparoscopic procedure to look at it. And sometimes in severe cases, we'll even kind of laser some of it out, but it's a tough one. One thing I would do is check hormone levels to see where your hormones, what they're doing. You may have way too much estrogen in relation to progesterone. So, you know, I treat, especially if it gets worse, of course, before the days before the period, we use a lot of progesterone, bioidentical progesterone for that situation. But you want to get some baseline measurements. And the other thing I would do is make sure my gut function was normal. I mean, there's some reason, and it may be just bad luck that you have that, but, you know, certainly nothing you're probably doing to cause it. But I think when your gut's functioning normal, you're less likely to get this. So I look at my gut function. I look at the different kinds of foods I ate and get your baseline levels checked. Preferably, if you have 28-day cycles, check your hormone levels, female hormone levels, somewhere between days 19 and 23. Day one's the first day of your period, just to see, you know, where your, especially estrogen progesterone ratios are. Then you may want to incorporate some progesterone into that last half of your cycle. I like, as far as supplements go, you know, I like curcumin a lot. You know, you might even be able to use some low dose naltrexone. I find that it helps a lot of situations you wouldn't think it would help for. You know, of course, Aleve is the over the counter medications most people use. I'm sure you've tried that. If it's terrible, like you say, you may have to go to a prescription medicine. Like there's one called Toradol that comes in pill form. You think of Toradol as being an IM injection, and it is. We use it all the time for severe pain in the office. It's a non-narcotic, but sometimes I'll use it orally in 10 milligram doses during that time. You really have a lot of pain and inflammation, way more potent than any, you know, Aleve or Motrin or anything like that. But So you might try, you know, look at your levels, try some progesterone in the latter part of your cycle. If you need a prescription medicine, don't hesitate to use that. You know, I use the best of both worlds. You may need some other medications for that that's prescription, like Toradol. Mm. I like it a lot. And maybe try some low-dose naltrexone. It works good for autoimmune disorders. Not that that is an autoimmune disorder, but it's kind of, most people don't know what exactly causes it, but you know, it's usually some kind of hormonal imbalance. So get those checked. Consider those things.
And I'll add, we didn't explain this episode with Robin Riddle on endometriosis. If you want to kind of go a little bit deeper, Robin goes into a lot of these different strategies with the hormones. So definitely check that out. All right, I gotta put this up here just because you said your day was great, and Stephanie is saying that you've done some you've been doing some yoga. Is that why you look so relaxed?
Well, maybe so. Yeah. No, they asked me to, between patients today, I was doing a little stretching. And they said, wow, Dr. Rogers, you're really flexible. So they asked me to do a few poses like the crow, you know.
Can you do the crow?
I can do the crow, yeah, standing crow. If I had a little more room, I could have, you know, done a little bit more. But, yeah. Thank you, Stephanie.
Stephanie, so good to see you. You guys know Stephanie if you've been to the Kingsport office. Thank you for hanging out with us this evening. And I need to see some of this yoga. I've never seen you stretch. I've seen you do some bands.
Yeah, I use a lot of bands, and I don't do a lot of formal yoga, but I do like it. I like to stretch.
All right, let's get to an arthritis question here. There are many bone arthritis supplements out there. Are there any you suggest to help relieve pain and might actually repair symptoms like bone on bone pain? And it goes in to say, if not supplements, any other suggestions to relieve the daily pains? It seems this is in regards to arthritis, maybe some arthritis and osteoporosis. Are they the same thing?
No. Okay. Osteoporosis is loss of bone. Osteoarthritis is more degenerative wear and tear, which causes spurring and inflammation. But yeah, you know, I love curcumin. I've already mentioned it once. That's my favorite natural anti-inflammatory supplement. It's turmeric. But MSM is a good one. Chondroitin by itself probably doesn't do much. But I like the MSM. But one of my favorite things, if it's bone on bone, I don't know which joint you're talking about, but maybe knee or hip, you know, it can get to that point where you need a joint replacement. See this a lot. But I love PRP treatments. We do those in the office. Jill Hendrency, our PA, amazing PA in Bristol, does a lot of these. She injected both of my knees. I don't quite have bone on bone. But, man, it really helped my knees. And I definitely have some arthritis being 68 years old, being real active. I definitely have some arthritis and have some loss of cartilage in my knees. And that PRP, platelet-rich plasma injections, really help. We draw blood from your arm, spin it down, get the platelets off. I call it liquid gold and get it injected into the joint, really helps. I'm going to have her do my thumb joint next, because my guitar playing, I've developed some arthritis in that joint at the base of my thumb. But I'm incredibly impressed with PRP when it gets pretty advanced. But try turmeric, curcumin, try MSM. Certainly collagen supplements may help stimulate growth of cartilage. Orally, I take keto collagen every day as well. But just see how bad, if it's really bad, think about PRP before you actually go in for a joint replacement. Mm. And stay active. Drink a lot of water. And don't hesitate to, you know, come in and let us evaluate it for you. Make some decisions.
Great question there. The osteoporosis and arthritis questions, I'm assuming, you know, we're getting a ton of those. So thank you for sending that in. That's going to help a lot of people.
I'm going to have an orthopedic surgeon from Asheville come to our Johnston City office here in a couple of weeks and do a podcast with us on bone health. So be sure to tune in for that one. He's an orthopedic surgeon turned integrative medicine expert.
I practice like I do. Yeah, and that's similar to Jill's path. You know, she was in ortho for a long time, and now she's in integrated medicine, working at Performance Medicine in the Bristol office. So I think, you know, I wonder if that's like a pattern, and it's great to have that that background for bone health, because so many people are concerned about it. All right, let's get to this next one here. Any suggestions for an 85-year-old, very active / healthy person to try for some feelings of neuropathy in legs and feet? Not painful, just an annoying tingling at times, and don't want it to get worse. What's your thoughts on this?
It'd be nice to find out why you have neuropathy in your legs. Are you diabetic? Do you have a lot of back problems? Degenerative disc disease, which probably is. You're probably not diabetic. You probably would have said it. But, you can certainly get it evaluated if it gets worse through some, getting the EMG testing done. That's not a fun test to go through where you stick needles in and shock you and measure how long it takes to get down to your feet. But one thing I would try is just some vitamin B6. You know, it's very good for neuropathy. I like B6, up to 100 milligrams of it. And I think it really, if you're looking for something really easy to do and very safe, but don't take over that much because it may make it worse if you take mega doses of it. But try some low-dose vitamin B6, pyridoxal, and see what happens with that. If it gets worse, you might want to have it evaluated. Interesting. It's not painful. It's just really annoying, like you say, pins and needles type feeling.
All right. Great question there. This is a more of a general question, but one that I think is super applicable because we talk a lot about generics and we talk about off-label medications or medications used off-label. This question is, could you please share your thoughts about generic versus brand name drugs? Do all pharmaceutical labs, both in USA and abroad, have to meet the same quality control standards for the drugs they produce?
That's a good question. There are different standards for the United States and abroad. Definitely the US is a little more strict. Generic, I'm okay on most of them. I would not take a generic Synthroid or generic Coumadin. The quality control is not as good on generic drugs as it is brand name in most cases. But in a lot of cases, when the patent runs out, the pharmaceutical company that made the brand just makes a generic too. Just make it cheaper. But there's a quality, there's a standard in the United States where they have to meet within, I think, 15% of the potency. So there can be differences in different generics. There's no doubt. So there's many generic companies that make the same drug. So if you go to the pharmacy and you notice it didn't work quite well, you might ask the pharmacist, hey, which generic lab did that come from? Was it, Mylan, which is probably the biggest generic producer? So I'm okay on most of them. But if you feel like there's a difference, certainly ask the pharmacist about it and maybe try a different type of generic because there's such a big price difference in them. It's unbelievable sometimes. But no, don't do Coumadin. Don't do Synthroid as a generic. Mm. There's probably some other ones I just can't think of, but in general, they do have to meet standards, and they're mostly safe. I feel comfortable with most of them.
All right. Thank you for that question. Great answer, Doc. This is a little follow-up here. Also wondering if you are still seeing many cases of COVID, or is it winding down? Any insight there? Are you seeing less, same?
A lot less. Okay. It's still out there. I think I treated one or two cases last week by phone. But, yeah, it's really winding down. It seems like the cases aren't as nearly as bad. I mean, there's people just are not having to be hospitalized or not dying of it. There's always a few, just like anything. The flu kills people at high risk. So it's still out there. I don't think it'll ever go away. But certainly really winding down. And we always see less, you know, in the spring and summer, those type of respiratory illnesses, unless it was during the height of COVID, it didn't. But yeah, so that's good news, really good news. A lot of immunity out there for it.
All right, thank you for that question. This is one around semaglutide. Is it safe to be on semaglutide when you're going to have a colonoscopy?
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't be. You know, I probably wouldn't start my first dose, you know, the week of your colonoscopy. It may make you a little nauseated or constipated. But if you've been on it, yeah, I don't see any reason at all why you wouldn't take it. I probably wouldn't take it on the day of the colonoscopy, if that's the day it falls on. So just wait till after the colonoscopy and take it the next day.
All right, and I'll follow up with that. Is it safe to take it while pregnant too? I know there's some.
No, you don't use it while pregnant.
Okay, so don't take semaglutide while pregnant. Okay.
Or metformin, either one. No, you can't.
Okay. All right, guys. Sonia, good evening to you. Welcome in. Motaz, I see you. Great to see you, brother. All right, let's get to this one here. And I'm going to put it up. I know we're going to get a little more information on this, but someone recommended this homeopathic allergy option called Allergena, saying it's amazing. Tennessee would be the zone 2 variation. And I'm trying to find, look at this image here. What are your thoughts on the ingredients? And I'm seeing if I can read the ingredients. It seems, let's see here. Zone 2 grasses and zone 2. There's a lot of stuff in here, so I might have to do a little more.
I've never heard of it. You know, homeopathic medications usually have a real medicine in it, maybe be a prescription medicine, but they dilute it out so many times that you can't detect it in there, therefore making it legal. A lot of people like homeopathic medications, and they seem to work sometimes. So it's going to be safe for sure. So you might want to try it and just see if it works for you. But I'm not familiar with that brand.
And if anybody,
I'm not sure about the zone too. I don't know. The Tennessee is a bad area for allergies. And right now they're really peaking.
Yeah. And that's why I want to do a little more digging on this. I see the image here, and what we'll do is we'll bring this back up on another show where we can, I'll make sure, Doc, you see the ingredients there. But if anybody has any insight around Allergena, go ahead and put that in the comments, and we'll kind of continue that conversation. Let's see here. This is a blood pressure question. When do we consider blood pressure medicine? My top line is borderline, and my low number is okay. So, you know, we've talked a lot about not taking blood pressure medicine on this show. When should we consider it? What sort of numbers?
Yeah, I saw a new patient today for a hormone evaluation, a guy, and his blood pressure was, the nurse took it twice. You know, we take vials every time we see a patient. It was 200 over 105, and consistently. And I said, you know, we need to deal with this blood pressure before we talk about anything. And he says, well, it goes up at times. You know, I was rushed in here and all this. And You know, when he gets to that level, though, I went ahead and put him on a low SART and a blood pressure medicine that I think is very safe. Hardly ever see a side effect from it. Everybody in his family has it. You know, even if it goes down to fairly normal at home, he still needs a blood pressure medicine. Mm. You know, especially if you tried other things like garlic or hawthorn or maybe, you know, decreasing your salt intake, exercising and all that. But somebody like that needs a medicine for it. And so I, of course, put him on one. But, you know, if your top number is consistently over 140, you need to do something about it. We used to say 140 over 90 or below is okay. Then they revised it to 120 over 80 or below. Now there, a new study came out about a month ago saying that there was no difference in mortality and consequences between 140 over 90 and 120 over 80. So it's a tough thing because when you consider you're taking one measurement, you know, you need to take it many times. You know, it's everybody's going to go up when they're exercising, when they're, you know, real busy. It'd be nice to have a 24-hour blood pressure monitor. They're out there. I've just never seen one. They're out there, but, you know, where a cuff blows up every, you know, few minutes and through the day and night, and you could get an average, but it's almost unrealistic to have people do that. It's unlike a continuous glucose monitor. I wish we had something that would measure blood pressure a little bit easier than the cuff. But, you know, if it consistently stays over 140 over 90, time to do something. And, you know, as people get older, their top number is going to go up because your arteries become a little stiffer as you get older. And certainly they call hypertension the silent killer. And certainly your chances of a stroke or heart attack are greater the higher it goes. So it's definitely important. Also puts a lot of pressure on your kidneys and your brain. So, you know, anything over 140 over 90 consistently, you need to treat it, whether it be through an herbal, exercise, salt restriction, whatever, or maybe medications. So
I'm going to put this up here from Roel because this is completely pertinent right now. Been trying to get my systolic number to go down. My diastolic number is good. I take my garlic supplement daily, but having trouble. My numbers are mostly 140 over 80.
You know, that's borderline area. The problem comes in when they call it the pulse pressure. That's the difference between your systolic and diastolic. And the wider that becomes, the harder it is to treat because a lot of times there's not a medicine for your diastolic and not your systolic or vice versa. So you're going to lower both of them. But so you start out real slow. I don't think, Roel, that I would add a prescription medicine to that at that point. But check it several times a day. I like garlic. You may want to add hawthorn. Hawthorn's my next choice for helping that kind of thing. It also helps cholesterol. But just keep checking it and keep an eye on it. And you're not to the point where I'd put you on a prescription medicine for it yet, though. But that's always the problem because as you get older, your arteries get stiffer.
Yeah.
And that systolic number is going to be a little higher probably. You may even try, you know, some L-citrulline or something like that.
Super interesting. Great topic there. Thank you for putting that in there, Roel. Great question. I'm going to put this up here from Montana. Montana's in our West Knoxville office, and she's right. I look at mine on my Apple Watch, get some blood pressure numbers.
You get a there. Blood pressure? I don't believe it. I don't think.
Oh, maybe.
I don't think there's any watch or any device that can take your blood pressure from a watch. I haven't seen it yet. It just makes you wonder how it could work.
It's definitely heading that way. Maybe it's maybe we're talking about heart rate. I'm probably thinking of heart rate. Montana, you can clarify in there for us.
Yeah,
if you're seeing something.
I didn't know if it's accurate. You know, you can measure it against the cuff, but I wasn't aware that there was anything that was accurate at all with that.
That's incredible. I think that's definitely where it's heading, though.
It's probably coming, but yeah. It's hard to believe it could be accurate.
Yeah, that's interesting. So she's had a patient come in comparing the numbers a couple of times. Wow.
Wow.
That's interesting.
I need to see that. I need to see that because I've never seen that.
That is super cool. Interesting. It's a smartwatch, which I'm assuming an Apple Watch is a smartwatch. But man, Montana
makes you wonder if it takes it continuously or and intermittently. That's interesting. I'll have to check that out.
That's super cool.
Interesting.
And they compared it with the numbers with the cuff in office.
Wow,
that's cool.
Interesting.
I'm gonna put this up. We're getting a couple different comments around Allergena. Let's see. Butch's bought some today from Allergena. Super cool.
Awesome.
And then I'm seeing this from Ruth. So this is out there. So we'll have to thank you guys for putting this in. If anyone else has tried it or, you know, heard things good or bad, let us know in the comments. And we're going to dig into that, especially being in Tennessee where allergies are so bad. All right, let's see here. I think we're done with the questions that came throughout the week. Guys, if I missed a question, go ahead and you can shoot me an email. I'm kind of looking at that as well as our Instagram page at the moment. So if I missed something, remind me and I'll make sure to put it in. But for now, we're going to go into the comments and take live questions from the people with us live. Welcome in, everybody. If you guys have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments there. I want to thank Lisa for sharing the broadcast as always. If you guys are having a good time, share it with your friends. We certainly do appreciate it. Let's see. There's a methylene blue question. Barbara's asking if methylene blue can be bought at Max. This Max is a pharmacy in Kingsport. Do you know?
I don't know if they carry it or not, but it's easy to get.
Yeah.
You know, we have it in our offices and you can order it online. So they probably do. I just haven't seen it in there. But,
and this is from Tammy. The methylene blue you mentioned in the email today, is it a prescription? And
no, it's over the counter.
It is an over the counter medicine, and which is so fascinating. This the methylene blue thing is definitely hitting the zeitgeist, as people might say. People are searching for it, so it's
the zeitgeist. I don't know that term.
Yeah. Zeitgeist. Help me, guys.
Is that a millennial term?
Zeitgeist, like hitting the culture, hitting the like. It's in the atmosphere, maybe. Like,
man,
like
that's a new word for me. I've learned a lot of new things tonight on here.
all right, let's get to the next question here from Barbara on YouTube. What is the proper dosages for B1, B6, and B12 for building nerve health, sciatica, and the fatty cushion around the nerves? I'm 74 and realize that we'll probably have some bearing on the amounts, assuming the amounts of B1, B6, and B12.
Yeah, you can still take the normal dose because it's a water soluble. Those are B vitamins are water soluble. You know, the B6 is the most important one, and I definitely get 100 milligram, but don't go over that with the B6. The B1 is thiamine. I'm not sure the milligram on that by itself. I'd have to look that up. B12, I like B12 in, you know, just a milligram sublingual, or get a B12 shot. But make sure on your vitamins that you get methylated B vitamins. I think that's the most important thing. They're more bioavailable, especially with so many of us having that MTHFR methylation defect. Most of us do. So make sure they're methylated vitamins. And the most important thing is that B6, get 100 milligrams of it.
All right, Barbara, I hope that helps. I'm going to put this, maybe I'm off with the zeitgeist. Maybe I made that term up. I know it's a term, but maybe I just completely mixed it up.
You may have made a new word up. I mean, that may be a new thing, Ben.
In the zeitgeist, methylene blue is in the zeitgeist. So Carter, maybe I'm off. Maybe I'm off here around the meaning of Steve saying I'm on it. Zeitgeist. It's the zeitgeist.
Wow. That's a new one on me.
All right. Let's see. Where am I missing? I'm just going to go ahead and put this up from Jack asking about the methylene blue. Can you give us like a little summary around what methylene blue does?
It does everything. It's just in short. Here's a little statement that somebody said about methylene blue. Nobody, this is a general statement, but nobody's going to ever love you like your mom does. Nobody's ever going to be happier to see you than your dog is. And if you're a doctor, when your patient's crashing, you reach for the methylene blue. It's in every ER for emergencies. But, you know, read the podcast from today, but it's, you know, it was the first medicine, really, back in late 1860s, they discovered it. They were trying to make blue jeans, these textile chemists, and they found that it worked good to stain things under a microscope where you could see things better, like bacteria and different parts of the cell and things like that. And what was funny was they were able to identify the something called Plasmodium, which is the parasite that causes malaria. So it identified malaria. And while it was identifying it, it was on the stand, it killed it. So that was the first treatment for malaria was methylene blue. Then they also found out it killed viruses and bacteria as well. It's a great treatment for UTIs, especially recurrent UTIs. But it works, you know, kind of, it's a nitric oxide inhibitor. There's pros and cons to nitric oxide, but that's kind of how it works. Turns out nitric oxide, you know, it's good and bad. It can produce a lot of free radicals, you know, which are bad for you. So it kind of scavenges them up and it reverses methemoglobinemia, which is a situation where the oxygen on your hemoglobin molecule gets displaced by something else, like cyanide poisoning, carbon monoxide poisoning. That's why it's in every ER. It saves lives by injecting into the vein after poisonings and other poisons besides carbon monoxide and cyanide. So it's really makes you breathe better. We have used a lot of it since we've been treating a lot of long COVID. We even treat a lot of COVID with it because it opens up your lungs to oxygenate. It helps mitochondrial respiration if you get want to get on a cellular level. But it also does a lot of cool stuff for your brain. It crosses a brain blood barrier and gets in there real easily and prevents oxidation. So there's a lot of evidence that it really helps early stages of dementia and Parkinson's. So it's amazing little supplement. It's over the counter. It's very safe. There's a couple of caveats. Go listen to the podcast, but really a wonder drug. It's amazing. More doctors don't even know about it because it's old timey. It's, you know, you can't, it's generic. It's over the counter. You know, nobody's making money off of it. So big pharma's not interested in it.
Well, I think that's what I mean by the zeitgeist. So I'm going to go back to zeitgeist, guys. Is Mark is saying it's defining spirit or mood of a particular period of history as shown by the ideas and beliefs of the time. So what I think I meant was methylene blue is now becoming more accepted again, you know, as for all of its different uses.
Wow, that's Ben, you really hit it. You really hit it.
I mean, Steve,
you know,
zeitgeist is
man, that's, I got a new vocabulary today. The mood of the times. Man, I don't know why I'm here. I am this old and I've never heard that.
Zeitgeist. So. I never.
You hit it dead on. Good. Good job.
All right. We're going to keep moving on, guys. If you have a question for Dr. Rogers, go ahead and put it in the comments, or else I'm just going to, my head's going to get so big with this, you know, newfound vocabulary that I apparently have.
You're quite the intellectual.
Karen is giving us a great definition. The defining spirit or mood of a particular period of history as shown by the ideas and beliefs of the time. The story captured the zeitgeist of the late 19th. So maybe I'm a little off.
Man, no, that sounds like you're right.
Thank you, Karen, for putting that in. Barbara's asking how much of the methylene blue you take.
I put usually 10 drops in a glass of water and drink it once a day. That's not a high dose. You know, if you're treating dementia and things like that, you can actually use up 3 to 5 milligram per kilogram, which is going to be a lot higher dose, up to 30 milligrams. And there's a, I think there's a half milligram per drop. So, you know, and you don't have to worry about, you know, if you took the higher doses, you probably ought to get a G6PD test drawn, kind of like we require for high dose IV vitamin C, to make sure you don't get a hemolytic anemia. You're not going to have that. I don't think it's been seen much. I've never seen a G6PD deficiency in my office ever, but and they've been taking it since 1860, and I'm sure they weren't checking it for it back then. So, but it's really interesting how that stuff works. Turn your tongue blue, but that just means you've taken it. Mm. And there was some, you know, if you look it up, they're saying, well, if you're on an SSRI like Prozac or Zoloft, don't take it. But really, that's bogus too. You're not going to get serotonin syndrome from taking that much. That's only been seen when they're using it intraoperatively, operating on parathyroid glands, and using it that way. And so that's not really much of a concern, although you could certainly take note of it. But methylene blue.
All right. Thank you, Barbara, for that question, guys. We're any questions around methylene blue, it's in the zeitgeist. D-Lin's got a question on YouTube. Doctor, did labs last week. My triglycerides were 402. Can I take niacin for that? If so, how much? My HDL is 30, LDL 65, total cholesterol 176, A1C 5.9. What's your thoughts on that?
Triglycerides are a little high if that was a fasting lab. Niacin's really not going to help that too much. It'll definitely bring your cholesterol down, which you don't need. It may push your HDL, the good cholesterol, up a little bit. Niacin may do that, but it's a very hard battle to get your HDL up much. You can exercise, maybe take niacin, but most people don't like niacin because it flushes them, and the non-flush niacin won't help at all for that condition. It may help for other things, niacinamide. But, you know, your cholesterol doesn't bother me at all. That's really good. Really what works for triglycerides is omegas. That's what you need to do, is push the omega-3s up, and that'll bring them down. Look at what you're eating, you know, but don't freak out too much. You know, it's certainly not out the roof. Gosh, I saw somebody last week, their triglycerides were 3,000. And here's a board question. What does that put them at risk for besides heart disease? Pancreatitis. That's a board question. I asked that of one of the PAs today. They didn't know it, but certainly your A1C is popped up a little bit at 5.9. So you might even lower your carbs a little bit. You know, people think triglycerides are mostly from fats, but really they're from carbs too, sugar. So, you know, watch that a little bit. Get on some omega-3s. Nothing terrible, but you know, I really look at insulin resistance a lot. Definitely get on a low carb diet, do some intermittent fasting. Berberine would probably help that A1C come down a little bit. You're not a diabetic, but you know, you're knocking on the door of insulin resistance. So those are the things I would do.
Do you still ever play the joke on patients? When, you know, they ask you a question.
I never joke with patients.
Well, I remember when every once in a while you would, in front of the patient, they would ask you a question and you would look it up on WebMD, the answer.
I would?
Yeah. Just to see if that unnerved them.
Oh, I can't recall doing that.
But. Come on, like a WebMD question? You know, just look up the symptoms. Okay, what are your symptoms? And plug it into WebMD.
I don't think I've ever done that. But that must have been another doctor you're talking about.
It rang a bell because of the board question. And my mind goes to like, for those who are kind of in on like ChatGPT and artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, I think, passed the medical exam recently.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure ChatGPT.
They would have gotten that one. They would have gotten the pancreatitis.
All right, I digress. Okay, let's keep going, guys. Great questions are coming in. So good to see everyone. Thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Let's get to Sonia here. I crave cereal at times. Is there a cereal that will not cause problems, bloating, etc.? I know of one. What's your thoughts on this?
You do know of one? Because I don't. I don't like cereal in any form, really. I don't think there's any healthy cereal, to be honest with you. Now, I see them like keto cereal, but, you know, I just don't like whole grains for one thing. I don't think they're good for you. They're hard to digest. You're probably drinking milk with it. Even if it's almond milk, there's really not a lot of almonds in there. It's mostly just water. But if you crave cereal like that, you might even try. And Ben, he's got an idea, but you may even try some steel cut oats or something. Certainly better than cereal. I used to crave it too. I used to eat it for breakfast and then a bowl before I went to bed at night many years ago. That was just a terrible thing that we did. Certainly haven't done that in many years, but try just eating something else. Maybe something a little more protein in it. Even cereals that claim they have a lot of protein in it, I'm hesitant. I like, you know, other thing you could try are hemp hearts. Mm. You could do that. They kind of taste like cereal. They have kind of like a nutty flavor. I love hemp hearts. That may be a good answer for you. What cereal did you say, Ben?
I was going to say, and I know like no cereal's good, but I do think this is a little on the expensive side. But I've heard good things around Magic Spoon, the cereal. It's like a, I think it's low glycemic, low carb. Have you heard of it? Have you heard of Magic Spoon?
I have heard of it. I didn't even think about that. I've never tried it.
I haven't either. I
haven't heard much about it, but I think there is something like that out there. Look that up. Good. Ben, you're on a roll tonight. You're doing better than I am.
I have not tried it, Roel. I've only heard from like the nutrition facts, you know, aren't as bad.
I'd like to know what's in it, but yeah, that's maybe a good idea.
He's saying it's
made out of whey protein.
Hmm. It's made of whey. We're all saying it's good. It's interesting.
Yeah. Hemp hearts are probably a better form of protein, but whey would be right up there. Interesting.
Let's see here. I'm trying to catch up, guys. If I'm missing somebody, let me know. I'm searching for some questions. Terry on Facebook is asking, if someone on Trulicity adds berberine, are sudden drops in blood sugar a risk?
Certainly you want to be aware of it. I haven't seen that myself, but definitely you think there may be that potential. So look out for it. You know, be prepared. Any diabetic ought to have some glucose tablets around. So it is a possibility. Mm. Berberine works like metformin, which is not supposed to cause hypoglycemic episodes. But if you're on a diabetic medication like Trulicity, you certainly need to be aware of that, because so it could.
Okay.
Great. Some people will drop the dose of something like Trulicity or any diabetic medicine.
Great question, Terry. Thank you for putting that in there. Barbara is asking, fish oil helps my triglycerides. I've been told I should get prescription strength omega-3 instead. Your thoughts?
Well, omega-3 is fish oil, but there is one called VASCEPA, I think, VASCEPA. that's a prescription omega-3 that's probably a little bit more pure. And if your insurance, it's real expensive, but if your insurance covers it, it'd be a good option. But I push the omega-3s pretty high on people. If you ever hear a report that they don't work, it's because they're not pushing the dose high enough. They definitely work. But you do have to be careful about getting any kind of omega-3 fish oil, because some of them are not good. There's a tremendous difference in the quality. If you can cut into them, they smell rancid. They're not usually good. I like the orthomolecular omega-3s. That's the one I take. And then the next best would probably be the Life Extension. But there's some other good ones out there. But certainly the SEPA is, you know, the kind of gold standard if your insurance will pay for it.
And that might be what Barbara's referring probably to there. Thank you for that comment there. And we might have gotten this from Sherry. Real quickly, I think you mentioned who shouldn't be taking methylene blue. Anybody that comes to mind?
Pregnant people should not be taking it. People that in high doses, if you have a G6PD deficiency, you know, which I did a podcast on 2 or 3 weeks ago, I believe. Mm-hmm. You can look at that. But and you know, just have caution about if you're on high doses of Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, those things. But in the doses you're going to use it in, it shouldn't be a problem. It's just rare. But just be aware of those two things. But the only one that shouldn't absolutely take it's pregnant women.
All right. Thank you for that, Sherry. Let's get to Motaz here. What is the dose you recommend of fish oil or omega-3s?
Three grams, then measure your fatty acids like we do on our Cleveland and look and see what it is. Sometimes we go up to 4 grams, but I'd push it to 3 grams, which usually means 3 a day.
All right. Thank you, Motaz. This one from JQ is a consistent question we're getting, and I'm really pumped that this is coming up. It's in regards to kind of the transition off of Ozempic. The question from JQ is, once you start on Ozempic, do you have to remain on it? A friend is planning to transition off. Can you just kind of tell them, you know, how you advise people to transition?
Well, it depends on if you're taking it for diabetes or if it's just for weight loss, which I assume you're talking about. You know, if you go by what they say, you should work your way up to the maximum dose and stay on it. If you have a real problem with obesity, you know, I don't stick by that because a lot of people, you know, aren't chronically obese. They just need to get down and then they've learned to eat low carb and to do other things that will help them keep it down. So, you know, I have people that are on it indefinitely that have morbid obesity that just have to have it because when they get off of it, they're going to gain the weight back. I mean, there are many studies showing this, but if it's a moderately obese person that can change their habits and their lifestyle, they can, you know, get off of it after, you know, 6-12 months. Depends on how bad a problem they have with obesity. I mean, really obesity, you need to look at it as a metabolic disease, kind of like treating hypertension or diabetes. You usually stay on it. So if they get off of it and fail, that may be a sign they need to stay on it.
Mm. All right, JQ, thank you for that question there. I'm going to put this up from Steve. Do you like krill for omega-3 source?
Yeah, I do like krill. That's my favorite one. That's certainly the Life Extension and the orthomolecular krill.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that, Steve. Wayne on YouTube is asking, I just got an email about the FDA banning NMN. March 13th, 2023 was cut off. We'll still be able to purchase NMN from the interwebs, correct? Thank you for putting this in, Wayne. I don't know why they banned it.
But yeah, it's a good product. You know, you can still get, you know, NAD and some of the others. NMM is a precursor to it, but and you could probably get NR, nicotinamide riboside, but so it's not a huge deal. You know, I don't know really, I haven't looked into it too much about why they banned it. Usually if something over the counter starts working real well, they don't like it. go make your own conclusions about that. But, you know, maybe there's been some variances of contaminants they're worried about or whatever. I don't know. There's been so many in prescription medicines that they've had to pull too. So, but I'm not sure about the full story. I had heard that was, that had come, but I'd get another product if you want to get that.
All right. Thank you for that, Wayne. I'm going to put this up here from Allison. It was a very sweet comment. I think we are too, Allison. I definitely have some similar mannerisms as Doc here. But what I'm really excited about is for next week, because I think you're going to get another side where you see my brother up here, and I'd be very interested what you guys think the similarities there, because Andy and Dad definitely, you know, I think take off of each other from a looks perspective. I didn't get the smarts gene that Andy got.
No, I think you got it because, you know, you brought up that term tonight, the poltergeist term. I've never heard of that. Poltergeist.
Zeitgeist.
I know. There is a poltergeist. I think the poltergeist is an evil term.
All that to
say. It means evil. Isn't it? Poltergeist means evil.
I have no idea what poltergeist means. I barely know what zeitgeist means.
There was a movie called that. I think it's evil, but everybody out there would know. Somebody will look it up.
Wayne's putting
up. Yeah, you'll have Andy next week, and, you know.
Yeah,
Ben's going to be in Italy. Ben's going to be in Italy. He's going to Italy.
I am heading out tomorrow for a week, and my brother Andy is going to be on the show next week. So I'm super excited for you guys get to see Andy Rogers and Doc kind of discuss these health and wellness questions. It's going to be super, super fun. I can't wait to watch that. So definitely come next week, guys, and hang out with Ange and Doc, and as you see there, Izzy and Ike.
Here they are.
They're the here dogs.
That
week.
That signals the end of the show, right?
That's the show right there. Look at that. That's Izzy. I got to see her on Sunday, and I'm looking, guys, just to make sure I didn't miss a question. If you have
good
any
Easter
last minute ones, go ahead and put them in. We're gonna call it a show here. Thank you, Anna. Thank you, and thank you, Carter. That's very sweet. I really appreciate it.
Oh, and that. Allison's listening too. Mary's friend Allison's listening.
Oh, say, Allison, how are you? It's great to have you on the show tonight. Thank you for hanging out with us. Hope you'll be back next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Real quick from Brenda here. Either you or Izzy can answer this. Is there a problem taking saffron if you're on Eliquis?
No, I don't think so.
Nope.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Thank you for
if
that.
If you start bruising for some reason, but I've never heard of that.
All right. So. Did Izzy and Ike go to the Kingsport office?
That's incredible. They did. They came by the Kingsport office.
That's incredible. I love it. Well, is Ike going to show up? Or is it just the Izzy show?
He's taking the background tonight. He's been a little shy.
Izzy's
he gets
beauty.
Jealous. He gets jealous of Izzy.
Well,
Izzy's
guys,
getting big, though. He's very big. You'll come up. Come on up, baby. Oh, good boy. Ike's too heavy to lift now.
Ike's a big dude.
He's really heavy.
He's a big dude. Thank you, D-Lynn. Thank you for being here. We really, really appreciate you.
Ben, have a great trip.
Well, guys, yes, it's gonna be wonderful. I'm heading out tomorrow, guys. I love you.
There he is. Okay.
There's big Ike.
He is.
There's big Ike.
His head's way bigger than mine.
Ike's head's bigger than the screen. Since when did he get so camera shy? Is today National Pet Day? Anna's saying it's National Pet Day.
I didn't know that. Well, I'm glad we got the pets on.
I'm glad
on
we
here.
Got them on. Well, guys, come in next Tuesday. My brother will be here along with Doc. They're going to have an amazing show. We're so pumped that y'all hang out with us every single Tuesday. We do this Tuesdays at 7. Would love to see you back next week and every Tuesday after that. We enjoy this so much, and I know Ike does too. Doc, how do you think we did?
I think we did good. We had a lot of, Steve, learned a lot of new things tonight. I learned more than
Steve is saying it's
anybody
a 10.
Else did.
I think I give myself.
I'd give you a 10 tonight.
I'd give
really
me a 9.
Did.
I'd give me a 9.
I'd give me about an 8. I'd give you a 10.
I'd say you're at 8.5 at least.
Well, okay.
8.5 at least.
Have a wonderful trip. And everybody tune in for Andy. Andy's really funny.
Yeah.
You think
you guys
Ben's
will
funny?
Have a,
what do you see, Andy?
I'm really pumped for next week's show. Andy's going to be on it along with Doc. Y'all are going to have a blast. But I'll see you guys myself. I'll see you in a couple weeks. But thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Pop, love you, man. Thank you.
Love you too.
It's
have
a show.
A good trip.
Guys,
bye-bye.
It is a show. Thank you, Lisa. We love you. We love you guys. I'll see you next week. My brother will. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Don't
love you.
Go away.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.